This is Infants on Thrones.
Minisode.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and I have been in Tokyo this past week on business. Now, I was with a few Japanese colleagues coming back from a customer visit today when I heard the dreaded question. So, Guren-san, where did you learn to speak Japanese? I really, really hate that question. Now, the only question I hate worse is probably, where did you go to college? Because the answer to either one of those questions opens doors that I'd rather just keep shut and locked and bricked over like an Edgar Allan Poe story and then dipped and covered in cement like the electromagnetic anomaly that became the hatch on Lost and then sunk to the bottom of the ocean like the island in Lost on the sideways reality version of Lost and then exploded with the entire planet like Romulus in the Star Trek reboot and then sucked into a wormhole anomaly like a cosmos and then... You get the point. Now, the last thing I ever want to admit is that I went to BYU or that I served a mission, because then the next question is ultimately, oh, so you're a Mormon.
Mormon rap, do the Mormon rap.
It's complicated. But this afternoon in the taxi, well, I just spelled it out like I've never spelled it out before, and it was a pretty strange experience. And I had a minor epiphany or two that I decided I wanted to sit down and share with you from the comfort of my hotel room in downtown Tokyo. So first, instead of being confused and uninterested in what I had to say, they kind of loved hearing me talk about being a missionary from the other side of things, because now I could divulge the secrets, you know, I could explain all of the stats that we kept and the goals that we had for baptisms and the commitment pattern that we would use to act direct will you questions.
Brother Brown, will you and your family accept the atonement of Jesus Christ and be baptized this Saturday at the Alameda Chapel building at 1:30 in the afternoon?
Or at least as direct a will you question as you can really ask in Japanese. I told him how I had chuckled under my breath earlier today when I heard one of my colleagues break out his sales technique when asking a customer, will you be willing to try direct EDI transactions with our company? I know, fascinating stuff, right? But he used the exact same language that I'd used as a missionary to commit people to read the Book of Mormon or come to church or accept baptism. Because the way it actually translates is,
Mr. Tanaka, if it's good with you, I think I would humbly like to partake of you reading the Book of Mormon, or transacting an EDI, whatever.
And when I brought this comparison with the salesman up to my colleagues, they started to laugh because they see Mormon missionaries around from time to time, and now they know what they're all about. These guys are salesmen. Now, they cracked up when I told them what we would do every day, stopping people at the train station, going to the doors, and I told them about our door approach.
Hello, I'm Elder Ostlund, and this is Elder Ruplinger, and we've recently transferred into this neighborhood, and we'd like to briefly introduce ourselves. We're volunteers from America, from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and we have a very important message to you from God. Want to hear it?
So their response was, whoa, that's so heavy right off the bat. And yeah, not very subtle about it either. They both agreed that this is when they would say, no thanks, Kekodes. And they really loved hearing me explain that one of the most profound experiences of my mission was when a really nice guy actually invited us into his home. That was March 1992, around the Girls' Day holiday in Japan, where they put out dolls on display on these really cool red display platforms. And this guy was about 35 years old. He was married with two small children, and after a little BRT, that's building relationships of trust, not a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. We started in with our oh-so-subtle memorized discussion approach.
So, Mr. Kobayashi, we'd like to talk to you today about the meaning of life.
Once again, they started cracking up. Heavy! So heavy! And I said, yeah, that's exactly what this guy said, too. And he stopped us right there, and he said, look, you guys seem like really nice guys. Tell you what. Why don't you come back in about 15 years? Finish your college degrees, get a job, get married, start a family, and then let's sit down and talk about the meaning of life. And even though I knew I wasn't really supposed to, I thought to myself, you know what? He's totally right. What the hell am I thinking? Now that was a minor epiphany for me then, and telling this story to my coworkers today was another. I don't have to be embarrassed about my Mormon past. I don't have to hide it or avoid it. I can own it. And for people who've never actually experienced it, it can actually be quite interesting. So we were laughing about these stories, and ultimately they asked, "So you're not still Mormon?" And I hummed and hawed, and I explained how I don't believe it anymore, but they didn't seem to quite understand what belief had to do with being religious. Let me repeat that, because this was another minor epiphany for me today. What does belief have to do with being religious? And so I explained to them that the way Japanese people approach their Shinto mythology and the way that Americans approach their Christian mythology is very different. And I showed off a little bit and kind of caught them off guard because I know a little bit more about Japanese mythology than the common gaijin visitor to Japan. So I asked them, when a Japanese person reads the Kojiki, which is the oldest book of Japanese mythology, they understand that these are very old traditional stories, right? And yeah, they're important to the Japanese because of their rich history and tradition, but no one really believes that they're literally true, right? For example, people don't really believe that the sun goddess Amaterasu hid herself inside of a cave from the rascal god Susanoo, and he threw a great party with all the other gods for 3 days to try and get her to come out and show her face again. Yeah, said one of my colleagues. But there are places in Japan that still reenact this story, and we still like to tell it and learn about it. And you can go to one place that actually has the mirror and the stone that she looked into to cast her reflection out of the cave. Now, no one really believes that it's actually the stone, but it's fun to visit and to learn about it. It's very Japanese. For the Japanese, being religious means to have a very deep respect and a reverent awe for nature, for your ancestors, and just generally for life all around you. But let's take the story of Adam and Eve, for example, where a talking snake gives an apple and introduces sin and death into the world 6,000 years ago. Now, most Christians believe that that's actually a true story. They believe it so much that they'll reject what science tells us about the actual age of the earth. They'll insist that the world is only 6,000 or 7,000 years old, and that it was created exactly how it says in our book of mythology, and they won't let that go for anything.
I used to think we evolved from apes. Darwin's theory of evolution through natural selection seemed pretty watertight, but in doing research for this show, I came across a theory that deviates from Darwin's, and I believe that. I just found it in a dusty old book in a library. It's called The Bible. Some of the things you'll hear do sound a little bit far-fetched, I admit that. I thought it was a bit, but then I found out that the other name for the Bible is the Gospel, so it is all true. So, luckily, clue is in the title. Okay. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. It doesn't go into detail. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Bit dark, he sorted that out. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. Huh? Isn't that brilliant? Eh? Oh, come on, that's amazing. He made light up. Which means that he created the heaven and the earth in the dark! Fucking hell! How good is that? I'd have gone, right, let's have a little bit of light on this watch, let's see what we're doing, right. I need some planets. He went, that's everything, let's have a look, brilliant.
They'll even reject the idea of climate change, because ultimately, Jesus is going to come back. It's going to happen any day now, and the world's going to end, so really, what's the point of trying to change the way that we treat the environment? And besides, God's ultimately in control of all of this, not us. Now, that's what many Christians think. That's what they believe. But the Japanese aren't like that. Literal belief is not required to have a sacred respect for the world around you. And in the Christian case, literal belief can actually lead to less respect for the world and for the people around you. And then I explained that being religious for Christians, and especially for Mormons, meant living each day to be worthy so that you can get into heaven. The Japanese aren't like that. They're motivated to be good, respectful people because of their respect for life. But we Westerners are motivated by a fear of what happens after death. We must do everything to stay worthy. Now, this was also kind of a foreign concept to them, being worthy, so I explained it further. And what I said next hit me right between the eyes. You know, it was one of those moments where I explained something so simply and so succinctly, something that I'd felt for a long time but had never actually articulated before. I explained it to him this way. I said, for Mormons, part of being worthy means that you don't drink alcohol, you don't smoke, and you don't drink coffee or tea. If you do those things, then you're not worthy to get into heaven. So how do you think that makes Mormons view people who do those things? Mormons basically look at the rest of the world as unworthy, and that is a horrible, horrible way to view other people. It's just awful. And once I realized that, I just couldn't do it anymore. And we were all silent for a few seconds while that sunk in. And finally, one of them said, wow, I'd never thought about it like that before. Nope, but unfortunately, I had. And you know, it felt pretty good for me to get this off my chest, and I was glad that I had not avoided the dreaded question this time. Because that missionary training manual was actually kind of sort of right this time. If you do open up your mouth, you will eventually find what you wanted to say. And I did. And I bead me not ashamed. And I say these things humbly in the name of taxicab confessionals everywhere. M&M. Put my thoughts in a taxi, my heart in
reception. The last thing I saw was you. Hello, my name is Yumi Nakano, and I live in Tokyo, Japan. And I just brought through service to Mr. Green, but I don't know what is Infants on Thrones. You can comment on this episode on the website infantsonthrones.com, and if you really like what you hear, give the guys a 5-star review on iTunes. Nani kore? Anyone for the closing prayer?
Thank you for listening to Infants on Thrones.